CEO Outlook with Rita Trahan.
Welcome to CEO Outlook, the authors. I'm Rita Trahan. On these special episodes, I'm joined by leading business authors to explore their ideas and thinking. Today, I'm joined by Chris Beswick, co-author of Building a Culture of Innovation. In the book, Chris argues that innovation is more than just dreaming up new products and services. In fact, what he says is that instead, companies need to embed innovation in their culture. The book's practical innovation framework has been widely accepted by businesses and put into practice by companies as diverse as the Prudential and Waitrose. Chris himself is also the founder of The Future Shapers, a consultancy that helps companies become more innovative. Chris, thanks for joining me tonight.
Hi.
So, Chris, when I was writing my book was all about wanting to demystify the concept of capacity. You focused on innovation, so I'm curious, what made you start to think about innovation? What was it that intrigued you about it? And why did you first get interested in the concept? It's a widely used term, and many people have different meanings, understandings of innovation. So give us your perspective of the interest around innovation.
Okay, so there's about 17 questions in one there, but I'll do my best. The first thing for me is similar to you. How do we demystify this whole topic of innovation? You know, why do we look at organizations like the Apples and like Uber and people like that and instantly say, oh, they're really innovative? So what is it about what they're doing that we instantly label innovation or innovative? And I think part of the issue is that the word itself has just become part of our vernacular. It's become part of everyday language. And because of that, I think it's been devalued. And it's been devalued in terms of the real impact, that real innovation and real innovation capability and a culture of innovation, the real impact that that can have on businesses. So I've been in this space for several years, and on a daily basis, I see and hear organizations using the word, purporting to innovate, adding it onto strap lines, peppering the word innovation, or we are the most innovative X, Y, Z in marketing materials, and so on. But the actual real innovation, real creativeness, really different and brilliant solutions that we see are actually in fairly short supply. So what's the disconnect between the word innovation and what it can really deliver and what organizations are delivering on a daily basis? And it was that, it was demystifying that really intrigued me to want to put pen to paper, which is no mean feat, as you know, and trying to then help organizations, once they understand what that word is and what it really means, trying to then help them look at how they can embed that and build that as a capability across their organizations.
In your book, how did you try and sort of like unpack the word innovation? Because you've said, you know, people, when they think about innovation, they think of the Ubers, they think of Apple, you know, they think of those kind of sexy companies that are coming out with some cool things.
Yeah.
But what you're trying to get across from what you've just said is something very different around what innovation is. So how did you unpack that in the book to make it meaningful for people to understand what innovation really is?
Okay, so what we talk about in the book is what we call the innovation mix. And one of the challenges with innovation is when we have conversations in general, there's this automatic jump to the right-hand side of, if innovation was on a graph and incremental innovation and lean or continuous improvement was right over on the left, there's this automatic jump to the very, very right-hand side of that graph when people talk about innovation. The language that we hear in the media and that we hear companies talk about is all around being radical and being disruptive. And that's where we position the Ubers and the Apples and people like that. So what we do in the book is we talk about an innovation mix. And we talk about a mix of activity across that whole spectrum. So from incremental or whatever you want to call it in your organization, lean, continuous improvement, et cetera, et cetera. In reality, that's all innovation. It's just small-scale innovation. And then there's the radical and the disruptive level innovation at the right-hand side. What we really unpack in the book is this this gap in the middle. And I've referred to it in the past as I see an innovation paralysis happening in many organizations. There's continuous improvement, lean or incremental happening. And there's this real focus at high level, whether it's through accelerators or innovation labs or hubs or focus teams, on being radical and disruptive. And there's this, there's the paralysis because there's no activity in the middle. So what we unpack in the book is trying is a way of helping organizations understand the varying degrees of innovation. And we keep it simple and we say there's incremental, there's radical at the other end, and there's differentiated in the middle. And differentiated innovation is specifically around how do we as an organization do things differently that are genuinely different for our customers. And it's building a mix of activity that really helps organizations shift the needle on innovation.
And do you think, you know, that piece in the middle, and you said that, you know, this concept of a spectrum from lean right the way to sort of, you know, far out thinking that brings in some new product or some new
service.
Business
models or,
you know, whatever it might be. For a company to be successful, do they have to hit the mark from that incremental right the way to that sort of, you know, really creative space? Or can they be anywhere in the spectrum and still consider themselves to be innovators in their space? What's your thoughts on that?
The challenge with innovation is everyone wants to be radical and disruptive. The reality is the majority of organizations will never really do anything truly radical or disruptive. But that's what they're searching for. The other reality is our use of the word innovation and our self-professed innovativeness. The truth really about innovation is we cannot say what we do as organizations is innovative. Innovation isn't something you can deliver and package like that. We are innovative as organizations when we behave or when we do something or deliver something that our customers say, actually, that's really nice, that's really different, that's creative, that's innovative. The customer is the only one that can really label what we do as innovative. And when you understand that as an organization, it reframes your approach to innovation. And it helps reframing it in that middle ground. So you don't have to do anything radical to be an innovative organization. You could do lots and lots of small things. But if they impact the customer and they benefit the customer and the customer derives value and differentiation from them, and they label that innovation, then by default, you're an innovative organization. So any of that activity or any mix that delivers that reaction from a customer will mean you are an innovative organization.
I mean, that's a really interesting point that you make about only the customer can truly say and feel whether something's true innovation or not. You know, my experience is that most companies, when they're looking at innovation, tend to look very internally. So do a lot of navel gazing around what innovation is versus starting with, like, let's think about the customer and start from a customer perspective first. Mm. From your experience in some of the work that and in the organizations that you've worked with, have you come across that where they've been more navel gazing than they have more customer facing? And if so, have you helped them convince that they're starting from the wrong point? Because oftentimes companies think we're doing all these great things that we're showing that we're innovative because we've got this cool lab or we've called ourselves, you know, we've carved off a piece of the business and put it in a different office and told all, let's put all those creative types together and they'll come up with something wild and wacky and lead us into the future. But not many of them necessarily are looking at it from that customer perspective. No. So have you got any stories that you can share where you've come across that and how you've actually helped them to unpack that and almost sort of look in the mirror and have an aha moment, if you like?
Yeah, so there's an interesting point there, not to digress, but there's an interesting point that you raised there around we're still seeing innovation siloed. So the labs that you referred to then and the really cool creative teams over there in a cool office do it, you know, they're the ones that will lead us to the future. There's a real corporate challenge around that at the moment. And the challenge is that we, in essence, are still siloing innovation. We are taking what traditionally was a group of people in white lab coats in an R&D or research and development department. And all we've done is we've said, go over there and work in that really cool office and you can wear jeans and T-shirts now. But in essence, we've still siloed and pinned all the hopes of the success and growth of the business on the same siloed team. And we talk about that in the book, about that's not democratizing innovation. That's not building a culture of innovation. It's not building a real sustainable capability for innovation. It's segmenting and siloing again the innovation activity around six or eight people, right? And that's great if the output from that lab or that hub or team or whatever is sufficient enough to really push the organization into the future. The reality is we all sort of know that it's never going to be. The challenge with innovation is most organizations are still, they're still trying to come up with ideas, or their approach to innovation is to ask their people for ideas. And in reality, innovation starts not by asking for ideas, but by posing problems. And when we give people specific problems to solve, we see the outputs from that challenge and that that innovation, that problem, we see outputs far more valuable than when we just ask for ideas. The challenge with giving people problems to solve is we have to, as organizations, unearth those problems. And that means we've got to get really close to customers. We've got to build better relationships with customers. We've got to understand that instead of co-creating solutions with customers, we've actually got to bring the customer in far earlier into that innovation process. We've got to co-unearth problems with customers, co-identify problems with customers. So we've got to bring them into that innovation process far earlier. And most organizations aren't doing that.
Why do you think they're not doing it? Are they frightened of getting their customers' feedback? Are they just concerned that they won't be able to solve the problems? Or is it just think that it's a blind spot?
There's a lack of a real strategic approach to innovation and a lack of understanding about the whole framework and structure that building an organization-wide capability for innovation requires. And the organizations that understand that part of that process means engaging with customers, you know, and other strategic partners, maybe the next generation, so potential customers, et cetera, et cetera. And there's an understanding when you look at how you strategically approach innovation that that's part of the process. So I think it's a byproduct of organizations not properly understanding how to build innovation capability.
So building innovation capability, is it a process or is it a skill?
Innovation is actually quite process-driven. So there are processes which you can build, and frameworks and tools which help and aid the creative process, you know, design thinking, lean, et cetera, et cetera. Online tools like, you know, idea sharing platforms, all those are in essence stage-gated processes. So there's lots of process in innovation. It's not the chaotic, you know, crazy brainstorming. It's all about post-it notes and flip charts and things like that, you know, and bean bags. You know, it's not all about that chaotic creative element. There's lots of process to innovation. There are skills which enhance your, as an individual, your ability to solve problems and be creative. And in a wider sense, enhance an organization's ability to ultimately be innovative. So there's a mix of both.
So that brings me to my next question, really, yep. Which is, you know, to have both the process and the skill. And you talked about it in the book that, you know, it's not about coming up with the next new product or service. It's really about creating this culture of innovation. How do you create a culture of innovation? What does that look like? I'm a big proponent that culture is ultimately what drives performance of a company, large, small, medium, whatever size. I think culture is a real differentiator. Yeah. So how do you think about culture within innovation? What does that look like? What does it feel like? How does a company know if they've got a good culture of innovation in place?
We've got to unpack the whole thing around culture first, right? And I think we get too caught up when we talk about culture in that we mean everyone in the organization. So every single person, you know, is indoctrinated in this way of working. Thereby, we have X culture. When we're talking about innovation, we're really talking about how do enough people in the organization create a movement or shift the way the organization works with innovation and creativity and differentiation and different thinking as an output. How do we get enough of those people contributing to that so that there's a sense that innovation is a part of what we do every day? And it's a bit like any culture in the world, right? You know, British culture has certain traits, which, you know, if we say, well, tell me what it means to be British, we'd say, well, it's this and it's this. But it doesn't mean that everyone in England thinks or acts in the same way. But the majority of people think that those are the traits that make you British or make you, you know, a part of a culture. And organizational culture is the same. So we're never trying to get absolutely 100% of people on board. What we do is we seek out the people in the organization that want to do things differently, that maybe already are a bit creative and think differently and are up for challenging the norm. And it's about engaging as many and finding and engaging as many of those people so that we can propose challenges to them, when we can give them problems and we can ask them to consider, you know, different scenarios and business models and opportunities, and that we've got enough people collectively to genuinely come up with really nice, clever, different solutions. And if we've got enough of them, it creates, you know, culture's almost in the air, right? There's this thing about, can you touch it? Can you feel it? Can you smell it? Can you taste it? And it's sort of all of those. As an employee, you will know if the organization, how it makes you feel. And sort of isn't that culture. And if you're saying, well, yeah, we are creative and we do some brilliant things and we come up with brilliant things and we solve problems and we've done amazing things for our customers, that to me is the embodiment of we've got a culture of innovation.
So do you think, you know, to your point about it doesn't need to be everybody, but it needs to be a sort of like a good enough movement, if you like, that there's enough activity happening to really affect change.
Yeah.
How important is leadership at the top for innovation? You know, you often hear leadership at the top is vital for bringing about change and giving direction. And if you haven't got sponsorship at the top, then everything else fails. Do you think that's true for innovation?
Without any shadow of a doubt. I talk about three core things. So we talk about these in the book, but personally in the work I do, I talk about three fundamental core things, pillars that drive innovation. The first one is having a really clear strategic approach. The third one is how do we embed all the behaviors and the actions and all the things that innovation needs, or innovation as an output requires. And that middle pillar is leadership. So, you know, strategy is really important for senior teams and CEOs to understand where to shift the organization. But we know the famous saying, right? Culture eats strategy for breakfast. It's absolutely true, and I absolutely endorse that. But senior teams need a strategic approach to creating that culture. So strategy's still in there. It'll never go away. But leadership, ownership, sponsorship, and not just that, because they almost sound contractual, ownership and sponsorship. It's almost, you know, you know when someone you work for or a director or a senior person in the organization, you know when they're really up for innovation, when they're really up for challenging things. You know, there's a sense of real passion and being really up for thinking differently and challenging. That's what we need leaders to do, and that's the behavior we want them to display. But, you know, the traditional things of accountability and sponsorship and ownership, they need to be there as well, but I think there's something much more softer and warm and fuzzy about real innovation leadership.
You know, the skeptic in me would say a lot of CEOs today, if you listen in to their investor calls or their quarterly earnings calls, if they're publicly listed, will often talk about innovation in their results and what they're doing.
Yeah.
But when you kind of peel it back or lift up the rock and look underneath, it tends to be very much sort of surface value and lip service, really. And they don't really understand some of the things that you've talked about, you know, beyond just the wording of it. But what does it really take? And from your perspective, you know, if you were to advise an organisation, look, if you're really serious about innovation, then, you know, it doesn't sound like from what you said, this is like put a programme in place, run it for a month or two, tick the box. Hurrah, we've got innovation. Yeah. We can shut that box and move on. And suddenly we're, you know, innovators within our company.
Yeah. That would be great, right? But yeah, you know, where's my career? That's gone, isn't it?
So tell us, how do you advise CEOs really to say, look, if you really want to be innovative, then this is what you're signing up for.
Yeah.
And this is what it looks like if you sign up for it. Talk us through some of the conversations that you've had around that.
Not to go back to the book, but the reality is we wrote the book because of these conversations. And the book is a really great, it's a really great eye-opener for senior teams and CEOs who say, yes, we want to build a culture of innovation. It's one of our strategic objectives now. We're definitely up for it. My whole senior team is all aligned and we want to do it. And they, a lot of the ones I work with have made that decision without really unpacking what it takes to build a culture of innovation. And it's, you know, it's no mean feat, right? It's a lot of work. It requires transformation. It requires upskilling and coaching and different behavior across the whole of the organization, from every employee right up to the CEO, him or herself. You know, leading for innovation is a different skill set and it's a different behavior. And specifically at leadership level, you know, the majority of organizations I work with have probably spent hundreds of thousands of pounds or euros or dollars, wherever they are, on their senior team, the directors and the senior leadership team in their organizations. Over those people's career, they've probably had huge amounts of money spent on their development. Almost none of that curriculum and none of that time will have been around how to lead for an innovation-focused world. So it's all around, you know, the traditional leadership skills and behaviors. Mm-hmm. We're only just seeing the behavior and the skills and the perspective that innovation requires. We're only just seeing that start to become visible on leadership development programs. So it's a big deal, innovation, in terms of building culture and building capability, but rightly so, because innovation's a big deal. The outputs and the potential that building that capability for innovation gives an organization are, you know, they're absolutely amazing. You know, we cite the Ubers and the Apples and brands that we as customers and consumers hold on a pedestal and say they're doing brilliant things. You know, we look at all those companies and they are, we look at them as customers because they're doing really clever and interesting and innovative, in inverted commas, stuff. Well, that doesn't happen by default. That just, you know, organizations don't become and do that without putting huge amounts of effort into it, without putting huge amounts of focus on people and building the right culture and enabling the right behavior. So it does take effort, but the rewards are more than worth it.
So I want to come on to another buzzword that's out at the moment, right? And it's probably on your spectrum of your innovation spectrum that you talked about. You know, the latest buzzword I hear a lot about today is agile. So we're taking product development. You came from a product design development background.
Industrial designer.
So you'll know agile for you is old news. But for many companies today, they're popping in the word agile and saying we're putting in agile ways of working because it's making us more innovative in terms of how we are dealing with customers, getting product to market, doing product development, and or just solving problems, as you talked about.
Yeah.
Is that the answer for companies to implement agile? If they're agile, are they suddenly the new innovators? What's your thoughts on that?
There's no silver bullet.
You're shaking your head.
If it was visual, there's me definitely shaking my head. Look, there's no silver bullet to this. Agile, design thinking, lean, all those are individual tools and techniques and approaches in their own right. But you can't just pick one off the shelf and say, we'll put all our people through a design thinking program. And 12 months down the line, when all 1,200 or 1,000 people have been through it, by default, we are now an innovative organization. There's no silver bullet. And the organizations that take that very, very acute single tool or single approach view to innovation will ultimately fail. So giving people those new tools and new techniques and approaches is great. The key thing around building that capability for innovation is how are we as an organization removing the barriers that stopped people being creative, coming up with ideas, solving problems, challenging the status quo? You know, do we still purchase in the same way? Do we still measure people in the same way? Are they still, you know, challenged with getting X volume of product out of the door by 5 o'clock on a Friday? Because it doesn't matter how many groovy tools we give people, unless we fundamentally change the way the organization operates to enable that new skill or that new behavior, people are going to come back into the organization with a new skill, and that new skill is still going to butt heads with an organization that in itself isn't innovation ready. So you've got to look at the whole organization and how it operates in order to really shift the needle.
So my next question for you is, you know, and you've talked about, look, it's hard work. It's not a silver bullet. There's lots of different ways to sort of become innovators in organizations. I could be sort of skeptical again and say some maybe organizations or institutions are just beyond being able to do that. So let's take one as an example. Let's take the NHS.
Yeah.
Right? Probably an institution that would benefit hugely from having an innovation culture. You know, not a new product or service, but as you said, you know, embedding a culture of innovation. Yeah, it's been trying to do that for a long time. It doesn't seem to be getting that.
Why did you pick one so contentious?
Because that's what I do. That's okay, what my podcasts are about.
Of course. Okay, so the NHS spends a huge amount of money on innovation, right? I used to sit on a think tank around innovation leadership for the NHS. You know, it has innovation teams and units, and it spends a huge amount of money on innovation. My personal view about the NHS is the biggest thing that would help the NHS is leadership, right? Is not necessarily innovation. I think there's huge amounts of innovation potential and innovation activity going on inside the NHS. I don't think a lack of innovation is the NHS's problem. I think the way it's run and the way it's structured is the biggest thing that would dramatically shift the NHS.
So your point is that middle piece that you talked about. You said, you know, earlier on, what do you need to have
Absolutely.
An innovation culture? You need to have strategy.
Yeah.
Sounds like the NHS has a strategy. You know,
well,
it has,
maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But my
but it's
personal,
the missing piece is that leadership piece.
I think so,
that
yeah. And look, you know, that's probably completely off the conversation around innovation per se. That's just how is the NHS led and managed from mm-hmm. a pure. If you ran it purely as a business, yeah, my challenge would be it would probably fare enormously better.
And do you think there are any other businesses or institutions that sort of like sit on the edge of, you know, could really benefit from applying, you know, your six-step framework of an innovation culture that is not doing it today, and yet they've been trying and struggling with it for a long time? Can you think of any organisations that, or not necessarily like companies, but yeah. sort of industries
yeah, I think,
or institutions?
The legal sector
mm-hmm.
Is a really interesting sector.
I'd agree with that. Right now, it's going through a significant amount of change. Yeah,
and almost, you know, it's not that it's you know, it's too late, but has needed to change for a while. Anywhere where there's fairly heavy regulation, so financial services, banking. Having said that, some of the banks are doing brilliant stuff, right? Insurance sector, you know, you look at organizations like Aviva doing amazing stuff around innovation, you know, collaborative teams, you know, using technology like idea management and idea sharing platforms to drive innovation across the organization. They've got their lab, right? But they're using it properly. Some of those sectors themselves are where we would like to see them change their approach, be more creative, you know, and ultimately the output being innovation. Financial services and banking, they always cite regulation as their barrier. Mm-hmm. The reality is, and you know, and the listeners will probably roll their eyes now where when I say innovation loves constraint, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a woolly phrase, it's an absolute fact. What innovation is there for and what design thinking and all those techniques are there for is to help you circumnavigate barriers, to help you find a workaround around an obstacle. That's the whole point of problem solving. And all regulation is another problem to be solved. I'm not saying it's easy, and some of that regulation really impedes doing things differently, but it will never ultimately stop anything being done. There's always a workaround. And some of the big banks and financial services companies now are seeing, you know, we've got new challenger banks coming in. Well, they're doing things differently. That's why they are challengers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just about mindset and approach. And I think for a long time, we've seen some of these sectors use regulation and guidelines almost as a reason not to shift, because maybe, dare I say it, they might not have wanted to.
Yeah, I guess they could look at the pharmaceutical industries that have just as much regulation and yet have, you know, come out with
even
innovations.
More heavily regulated. Yeah.
Come out all the time in terms of new drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things around innovation, I guess, around that, around, you know, how do you get it to be really accepted within the organisation? A question that I wanted to ask you is that often I've seen companies sort of go down the path of innovation. Somebody crashes and burns, has a big failure, and then it's like nobody wants to innovate because nobody wants to put their head above the parapet to do that again. Pharmaceutical companies celebrate failure because the failure of something is often, you know, they've created a drug that they didn't set out to create, but they found it's curing something else or it's leading to more research and innovation. Yeah. How do you help companies that get risk averse, you know, because you need to be able to accept failure if you're going to have a true innovation culture, in my mind. From your experience, how do you get companies over that hurdle of not shooting the messenger and when you allow people to innovate?
It comes back to those first two pillars. It comes back to if you properly build a strategy for innovation and a framework for how you're going to approach innovation, what you want from it, how you're going to deliver it, how you're going to enable the organization, et cetera, you will and should have built your approach to risk into that process. And then that has to be supported and enabled by that senior team, that leadership team. There's one group of people we haven't talked about today, and that's that management layer.
Mm-hmm.
And they are vastly underrated in terms of the innovation process. I personally call, if we take that typical structure of an organization, mm-hmm. leadership team, management team, and then employees, that middle layer, that management layer for me, are the gatekeepers to innovation. They're typically the ones who view themselves at the most risk,
mm-hmm.
but who are, when we ask people to drive innovation through the organization and build a culture of innovation, they're the ones also typically asked to manage and take the most risk. They're the ones that the organization traditionally puts under most pressure to maintain business as usual, but then also says, but we want you to drive innovation across all your people, and we want their ideas, and we want them to solve problems. So they get challenged with these two sometimes opposing forces. One, keep the wheels turning, but two, we want you to do the innovation mm-hmm. thing as well. And unless there's really clear frameworks and support from the senior team around what risks are able to be taken, you know, what substitutes cavalier risk versus a smart risk, as we talk about in the book, then people by default, as you say, will not take those risks. They won't suggest something different. They won't try something different and try something new. And when we don't put in place that environment, we stop experimenting, we stop testing, and that experimentation is the backbone of innovation. And some of the organizations like Amazon, for example, you know, Jeff Bezos openly says, we've actually increased how much experimentation we do because we know it's a numbers game. We know the more things we experiment on, the more scenarios we plan, the more things we try and test, the more the proportion of them will turn into something quite unique, something interesting or something valuable. And that experimenting, prototyping, understanding how to build minimum viable products is something that organisations really got to get to grips with if they want to innovate.
How do you help organisations to sort of take on board this idea of experimentation, which I agree, I think, you know, I think it's a really powerful way to create innovation. But, you know, sometimes when people are excited about something, they'll continue to go with it, a bit like a startup that, you know, if only I get more money, if only I can just hang on for another week, it'll all come good. What is your, does your book give any guidance and as to when to kind of cut loose and say, you know, this was good, but it's not going where we wanted to. We need to stop it and move on.
Yeah. So we, and again, that's where, you know, the design world and design thinking and all the approaches that we use as designers really comes in to its own in that business environment. So, organizations have to, as part of that innovation process, understand how to incubate ideas. And using that incubation process, and there's loads of different ways you can phrase it, but typically it's build, test, learn. So how do we, we've got an idea about how to solve a problem. How do we quickly build, you know, a quick prototype or an MVP around that? And then how do we test it? Because at that stage, we haven't got a solution. We've got an assumption that we've solved the problem. So how do we very quickly test it? And then how do we learn from that? How do we, does that validate our assumption or does it not? Does it throw up other things that we just couldn't, didn't even perceive? And then you go back round. And that build, test, learn loop, we teach organizations to use that as a process. And very quickly, you find out whether, look, we're completely on the wrong track. What we thought was the problem and what we thought was the solution is just nowhere near what the customer wanted. So back to the drawing board. Do we reframe the problem? Do we need more insight, etc.? Or, wow, customer absolutely loves it. We've validated that assumption really quickly. Let's get it out there and now do a small-scale test or test it in a live market, etc. And those techniques are there to help you. You know, everyone will know the term, you know, fail fast, fail cheap. Mm-hmm. That's how we do it. Those techniques are there to help you come up with an idea to a problem and very, very quickly validate whether that idea is what customers want.
You're clearly really passionate about innovation and the value that it can bring to companies. So, you know, if you were sitting in front of a panel of skeptical CEOs that are planning their budgets, we're getting to the end of the year, they're probably planning their budgets for 2017 and, you know, weighing up whether to spend money on an on innovation or productivity efficiency or not spend money at all. What would be your sort of guiding points or wisdom, words of wisdom that you would give to them about, you know, why they should invest in it and how they should think about that investment?
Words of wisdom. Wow. I think the main thing is, well, there's two things, right? If I'm with the CEO and a senior team and I'm having to work really, really hard to convince them that innovation is absolutely critical, then that engagement's not going to work, you know, right? So there has to be a level of acknowledgement in that senior team that the world is, you know, and we hear this all the time and, you know, we hear it in keynotes and in the media, but the reality is the world we live in is so different than it was even 10 years ago, right? Post Lehman Brothers, the change that we've seen over the, you know, just in that short time, the technology that has been created since then, the businesses that weren't, you know, that were one guy in a coffee shop with a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection, you know, nothing more than a few years ago and have now got billion-dollar valuations. We didn't see that scale of advancement even maybe a decade ago or 15 years ago. So there has to be an acceptance that the world is fundamentally changing and our organizations must, at the very least, do as much as they can to try and keep pace. And most organizations won't be able to keep that level of pace. But CEOs and senior teams should by now recognize that innovation as an approach, and it's not the silver bullet, it's, you know, building a culture of innovation is multidisciplinary. So there isn't a silver bullet. When we talk about building a culture of innovation, we're talking about becoming better strategists, better horizon scanners, better leaders, building better cultures. And if we take innovation off the table for a second, what CEO doesn't want a brilliant culture in their organization anyway, regardless of whether it delivers innovation? So there are fundamental things that innovation requires, which if you never, ever do anything that the customer labels innovative, your organization will be a million times better for it anyway, for even attempting and putting in place the things that innovation needs. Your organization will be demonstrably better off. That's it. That's my closing speech, right? And if you're not convinced at that point, on top of all the media coverage, the reports that we see from the big consultancies about the value that global CEOs are saying innovation delivers and the need for, you know, changing markets and being able to come up with different business models, if you're, as a CEO and a senior team, blind to all the evidence that innovation is critical, then good luck.
Chris, that was a great, compelling argument for any CEO or business leader that's thinking about innovation. And it's a great closing argument for us to sort of sign off on, really. I think you've given some really great sort of practical advice and tips and insights as companies think about innovation. So thanks so much for joining me today. I've learned a lot from listening from you today. Chris, if the listeners want to find out more about you, how can they get hold of you? Do you have a Twitter handle, a website? What's the best way for listeners to find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. On Twitter, it's at Chris Beswick. There's no H in Chris, so it's CRISBESWICK. Website is the same, www.chrisbeswick.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you visit the website, the links are all there. And then I also run an innovation thought leadership site called The Future Shapers. So thefutureshapers.com. Check us out on there. Some brilliant thinkers around all the different subjects innovation requires. And that's a great resource for CEOs. So any one of those, you can find me there.
Great. Thanks, Chris. And if anybody wants to find out about me and more about what I'm doing, then you can find me at www.ritatrahan.com. You can listen to this podcast and other podcasts on ceo-outlook.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Rita_Trahan. And last but not least, my new book, Unleashing Capacity, The Hidden Human Resources, is now available on Amazon. Chris, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you.